So let's let's start our lecture portion or commentary portion now. So the first link I gave there is to the Access to Insight website. This is a translation of the Pali, the language of northeastern India 2,500 years ago that the Buddha spoke. This is translated by some monks, some Western monks who are practitioners and scholars. This is from the, I believe it's from the Dhammapada, and it's the section called Buddha Vaga, or awakened, Buddha Vaga. Buddha is awakened, Vaga is path, I believe, but it's a portion of that sutra or the Dhammapada, which is considered some of the oldest original teaching of Buddhism, considered to be right from Gautama's mouth and compiled a little bit later, original teaching, and it's in verse form and very short. So this is the middle of the page. It's basically verses 183, 185, and I'll read it. The non-doing of any evil, the performance of what's skillful, the cleansing of one's own mind, this is the teaching of the awakened. Patient endurance, the foremost austerity. Unbinding, the foremost, so say the awakened. He who injures another is no contemplative. He who mistreats another, no monk. Not disparaging, not injuring, restraint in line with the Patimokkha, which is the discipline rules of the monk, moderation in food, dwelling in seclusion, commitment to the heightened mind, this is the teaching of the awakened. Oh, you know, that's no joke, right? This guy is done. Gautama is done. And so what should be done, he has done. So the non-doing of any evil, the performance of what's skillful. Skillful is that term upaya, or skillful means, or the way of being with others and one's own mind, which just basically is, forms of kindness and wisdom. The cleansing of one's own mind, which is really purification by meditation and, self-healing and unconditional self-acceptance. This is the teaching of the awakened. Patient endurance, which is, we talked about this before, shanti. Similar to shanti, being the willingness to endure the abuse and the pain and the suffering or the negative action of our past karma and of the environmental conditions. Even the Buddha got a thorn in his toe, and Mahamoggallana was killed by a mob. Mahamoggallana was one of the greatest arhats in the Sangha of the Buddha, because he had killed his parents or something like that. So he had a heavy karmic load, even though he was an arhat, and he was violently murdered. How about that? Patient endurance, the foremost austerity. Unbinding, the foremost, so say the awakened. Unbinding is a very careful translation of release that comes by insight. He who injures another is no contemplative, meaning not a monk. He who mistreats another is not a monk. And so then the key is not disparaging, meaning not putting down others, not injuring, not harming others. Restraint in line with the Patimokkha, meaning, not killing, not stealing, not lying, not harming by sexuality, and not harming self by substances or others. Moderation in food, dwelling in seclusion, commitment to the heightened mind, this is the teaching of the awakened. And That section, the last two, non-performance of, actually the first and the last, non-doing of evil, not disparaging, not injuring. This is a discussion of how to live properly. the discussion about right action is in many ways a teaching on the preventing of creating new karma, the prevention of new karma by virtue and unwillingness to harm others by thought, word, and deed, but particularly by word and action. And so then we get into an understanding or discussion of karma. And this is very, very deep, and almost nobody understands it, and it shows that our understanding of karma is very limited, because the Buddha's understanding was much deeper, as you'll see from this discussion. And so that's the link I sent, the Lonapala Sutta, Karma and Salt. Now, I will read some and then make commentary. So, this is translated by a man named Tanisaro Bhikkhu, who was a Westerner. I think he's English. Jeffrey DeGraff, I believe his name is. And he's an abbot, and he's a big guy, and lots of translations, and very careful, very, very excellent, high-quality translation. Some of the best around of Pali is from Tanisaro Bhikkhu. And lots of what's on this site, Access to Insight, comes from his commentary and translations. And he speaks Thai, and he probably reads Thai, and he lived in Thailand, and he's an abbot now, and very, very fine person. So, let's get into this teaching here. Lonapala Sutta, it's from Anguttara Nikaya, which is a section of the sutras of teaching from the Pali, and it's called the Salt Crystal. So it begins, monks, for anyone who says, quote, in whatever way a person makes karma or kama, that is how it is experienced. Meaning, if I say that an eye for an eye, if I punch a person, then the karma is a person will punch me. This is what the Buddha is saying. In whatever way a person makes karma, that is how it is experienced. For anyone who says that, there is no living of the holy life. There is no opportunity for the right ending of stress. Meaning, if that were true, it would be impossible to achieve enlightenment. The true teaching is the next sentence. But for anyone who says, when a person makes karma, to be felt in such and such a way, that is how its result is experienced. Then there is the living of the holy life, and then there is opportunity for the right ending of stress, meaning freedom from suffering and ignorance. These are two different views of how karma operates. The first is basically purely mechanistic and proportional. Proportional only to the form of the action. Proportional only to the nature of the action and the requirement for that exact form to be returned or re-experienced in the karmic payback. That's not a true understanding of karma for the Buddha. And his understanding is this, that when a person makes karma, and here's the key, to be felt in such and such a way, they making their karma, and this is the sutra here will explain it. When a person is making their karma to be felt in such and such a way, that is how its result is experienced. So it's not that the way you make your karma is how it's experienced in the return. It's when you make the comma to be felt in such and such a way, in such a particular, in a particular way, you're making the karma to be felt, meaning actually experienced, in certain way, not only by the form of the action itself, and that's what we'll explain, but when the true understanding is that the result of karma is experienced by how we make karma to be experienced, not the action leads to the same action coming back. It's the modification or the quality of the total overall quality in the establishing of the karma and of yourself that leads to the feeling of that karma in a certain way, which is the result. So let's explain. So the second paragraph, quote, "There is the case where a trifling evil deed done by a certain individual takes him to hell. There is the case where the very same sort of trifling deed done by another individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. Now, a trifling evil deed done by what sort of individual takes him to hell?" And he goes on. "There is the case where a certain individual is undeveloped in contemplating or in understanding body, undeveloped in virtue, undeveloped in mind, undeveloped in discernment, restricted, small-hearted, dwelling with suffering. A trifling evil deed done by this sort of individual takes him to hell." Hell is as real a place as 3D dream. The 3D environment is an illusion, so they say. It's also experienced as apparently solid. Sad to say, hell is as apparently solid and real as the 3D environment we're living in now. I hate to say it, but I think that's actually true from my experiences. Hell is as real a place as 3D physical is a real place, which is, yes, apparently real. So then the teaching here is that the trifling, meaning little evil deed done by the undeveloped person, undeveloped in virtue, undeveloped in mind, undeveloped in discernment, small-hearted, restricted, dwelling in suffering. I have experience of a person just like that recently. The trifling evil deed by that type of person takes that person to hell, or leads them to an experience of hell. Then, on the other hand, a trifling deed done by what sort of individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment, meaning the same evil, little evil deed done by a different type of individual appears right now and is nearly non-effective. It doesn't have much effect. Then the Buddha explains, well, there is the case where a certain individual is developed. Again, this is the contrast. This is the case where a certain individual is developed in contemplating body, developed in virtue, developed in mind, developed in discernment, unrestricted, large-hearted, dwelling with the immeasurable. What immeasurable? Well, it's actually immeasurable concentration. But the Brahma-viharas are also called immeasurables. So it really means dwelling with the desire to have a big mind and a big heart. And, of course, then higher states of concentration. A trifling evil deed done by this sort of individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. So, okay, we see that a little negative, I mean, you know, the word is evil here, right? That's the original word, evil. We modern, sophisticated people don't like that word, but the Buddha used it, so it's good enough for me. So a person who does an evil deed, that's very little, if they themselves are very undeveloped and not nice, actually, can lead to hell. Meanwhile, the same little evil deed done by a very developed person can be experienced right now, immediate karmic return, and barely appears even for the moment. Okay, so karmic result, the nature of karmic result, not depends not only on the deed, but on the doer. And here we go to the analogy of the salt. The Buddha goes on. Suppose that a man were to drop a salt crystal into a small amount of water in a cup. What do you think? Would the water in the cup become salty because of the salt crystal and unfit to drink? Yes, Lord. And I guess there's a dialogue here. Yes, Lord, meaning some monks answered. Why is that? There being only a small amount of water in the cup, it would become salty because of the salt crystal and unfit to drink. And the Buddha goes on, now suppose that a man were to drop a salt crystal into the river Ganges. What do you think? Would the water in the river Ganges, the Ganga, become salty because of the salt crystal and unfit to drink? And they reply, no, Lord. The Lord is Bhante. Why is that? There being a great mass of water in the river Ganges, it would not become salty because of the salt crystal or unfit to drink. The Buddha goes on. In the same way, there is the case where a trifling evil deed is done by one individual, the first one, and takes him to hell. And there's the case where the very same sort of trifling deed done by another individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. So the same deed, the same salt crystal, but the different condition of consciousness of the doer. One is a small cup, the other is a great cup. One has a small mind of hate and selfishness and narrow view and aggression, and the other one has a big mind seeking love and seeking wisdom and seeking peace and seeking the benefit and the goodness, the happiness for all. That's all. So we've got the two different ways of experiencing the placement of salt crystal in water, very much depending on the size of the body of the water, depending on the consciousness and the development of the doer of that deed. In the one case, we have the case where there's a trifling evil deed by one that takes him to hell, and another, where the same deed is experienced in the here and now. We see that the trifling evil act done by a certain individual who's undeveloped in body, meaning contemplation or being with body in a balanced way, undeveloped in virtue, undeveloped in mind, will experience painful feelings that invade the mind and stay there. Meaning, this is the gloss that the translator added to the phrase undeveloped in mind, talking about the small cup person. Undeveloped in mind here, Tansaro Bhikkhu added, painful feelings can invade the mind and stay there. And that's exactly what I said before about when the Buddha said that the main purpose or a significant purpose of sila or morality and virtue is prevention of regret. Regret is painful feelings invading the mind and staying there. I really hurt those people. I really hurt myself. I really messed up. I really didn't do well then. Or I'm so angry at myself. And so there are a lot of people walking around with self-hatred. That's the basis of all the negativity on earth is self-hatred. But they're not even in the ballpark yet. They don't even know that underneath their action is self-hatred or grief about themselves and low self-value. They don't even know that. So undeveloped in mind leads to painful feelings invading the mind and staying there. And so the trifling act, evil act done by that person, undeveloped in discernment, restricted, small-hearted, dwelling with suffering, that person can go to a deep experience of hell, whatever that is, from a trifling evil deed. And then on the other side, you have the trifling evil act done by what sort of individual experienced in the here and now? What type, you know, the Buddha goes on, now, a trifling evil act done by what sort of individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. And again, we see the same as we saw before. There is the case where a certain individual is developed in body, developed in virtue, developed in mind, meaning painful feelings cannot invade the mind and stay there. You see, do we need painful feeling? No. But we think we do. Do we need to beat ourselves up? No. We need to acknowledge fault or harmful action and resolve to not do it again and forgive ourselves and forgive others and try to make amends, whatever that may be. But we don't need to hate ourselves. But we do. Why? Because our teachers hated themselves. Because our parents hated themselves. Because everybody's miserable around us and they're living in a control grid. And they don't know it because they don't want to see it. And they're unhappy, of course, in the matrix. But they don't want to look at it. So they are naturally self-punishing. Humans on Earth are naturally self-punishing. And that means painful feelings invading the mind and staying there. But the person who is developed in mind and doesn't self-punish and developed in discernment with large heart, seeking to dwell with the unlimited, meaning open mind. A trifling evil act done by this sort of individual is experienced in the here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. The Buddha goes on. There is the case where a certain person is thrown into jail for half a dollar, is thrown into jail for a dollar, is thrown into jail for $100. And then there's the case where another person is not thrown into jail for half a dollar, not thrown into jail for a dollar, not thrown into jail for $100. Interesting. Now, what sort of person is thrown into jail for half a dollar or a dollar or $100? There's the person where a person is poor, of little wealth, of few possessions. This is the sort of person who's thrown into jail for half a dollar or a dollar or $100, unfortunately. And what sort of person is not thrown into jail for their money or for whatever reason? This is the sort of person, the person who's wealthy with many belongings and many possessions, right? Meaning they're not thrown into jail, they're not trying to steal money. That's the idea. Because they have a lot of money, they don't steal money, so they're not thrown into jail for stealing. But the person who's poor is the one who would be stealing, and that's the one thrown into jail. So, in the same way, this is again another analogy for the two types of people, or the two types of karmic result. The person who's poor in mind, in development, suffers the greater karmic return. So, again, the Buddha repeats, or this sutra repeats, the same comparison that the trifling evil deed that is the same yields a very different karmic result, and that's the key. Just as the water in the cup is very salty and the water in the Ganges doesn't make the Ganges very salty, not at all. It's nearly non-recognizable. Likewise, the same deed has different karmic result. And that's what the Buddha means by this phrase, the person makes kama to be felt in such a way. And that's how the result is experienced. The result is experienced by the very particular quality of the creation of the kama in that mind of that particular person. And their mind, each one's mind is different. And so the Buddha makes another analogy, and he says, it's just as when a goat butcher is empowered to beat or bind or slay or treat as he likes a certain person who steals a goat. You know, this is a human. Humans are rough with each other. They beat, they bind, they slay. They do all sorts of terrible things to each other here. You know? This is planet Earth. This is not Earth. This is this poor group of repeating souls, ignorant and self-destructive, proud and profoundly stuck. This is the group we came to incarnate in. Is it any wonder we're not happy? So, it's just as when a goat butcher is empowered to beat or bind or slay or treat as he likes a certain person who steals a goat, but is not empowered to beat or bind or slay or treat as he likes another person who steals a goat. What now? Meaning that the goat butcher may or may not have the empowerment to do whatever he likes to the thief. Now, when what sort of person has stolen a goat, is the goat butcher empowered to beat or bind or slay him and treat him as he likes? It's the case where the person is poor, of little wealth, a few possessions. That's the person that gets the punishment. And what sort of person has stolen a goat? In what case when is the goat butcher not empowered to beat or bind or slay or treat him as he likes? That's the case where the person's wealthy, with many belongings, many possessions, a king or a king's minister. That's the sort of person who, when he's stolen a goat, the goat butcher is not empowered to beat or bind or slay. And the Buddha goes on, all he can do is go with his hands clasped before his heart and beg, please, dear sir, give me a goat or the price of a goat, because that person has a lot of social power. Welcome to planet Earth. And so that's, again, the analogy of that karmic return, the nature of the karmic return depends not fully on the action, but on the interplay of the action and the consciousness development of the actor. And so then the Buddha repeats, or the sutta repeats, the first phrase, the first paragraph, and is explaining, monks, for anyone who says, in whatever way a person makes kamma, that is how it's experienced, for that person, there is no living of the holy life, and there's no opportunity for the right ending of stress. Meaning, the Buddha is saying, and they explained it more in another sutta, if it were that karma is a one-to-one issue, exactly what goes out is exactly what comes back, the Buddha said nobody would achieve enlightenment, because people have so much bad karma, because people have done so much evil action. And you know what? Before we came to Earth, we didn't. Before we got into our past lives of whatever they were, where we screwed up, we didn't have negative karma. If you're from fourth density, it's long in your past. And if you're from sixth density, it's far, far longer dissolved in the past. But we've been here for several lifetimes, so we acquired negative karma. We did it to ourselves by doing it to others. And we hurt ourselves the most, even if others deserved it. And so that's why we're experiencing, you know, karmic limitation. That's part of it. But the Buddha's teaching is that karma, the flow, the karmic process is not a one-to-one matter. An eye for an eye is wrong. Not only does that lead to further negative karma, that, you know, eye for an eye, because that's Orion. An eye for an eye is Orion. That's 4D negative wrong teaching, how to keep people making more karma for themselves. It is the goal of Orion that humanity continues to make evil karma for itself. It is their goal, one of them, that humanity binds itself further by greed and immorality and harm to all. That's their goal. That's one of their goals, that people hurt themselves and continue to hurt themselves and hurt others. That's what they teach. That's sick. that's the way. That's unfortunately what you see in every country. People are taught to harm themselves and others. How terrible. But again, the Buddha is saying that in the way the person makes karma, to understand the nature of the karmic seed, it's not simply the nature of the action, but much more so the nature of the doer. And so for a Buddha to kill somebody in a past life, in the future life, when he's a Buddha, it's experienced as a thorn in the toe. Some sharp pain that's finished quickly. For a less developed soul, their killing of somebody in a past life will lead to being killed in the present life. So, you want to protect yourself. increase your mind. Develop your mind. But even, you know, Mahamoggallana had to be killed. It's crazy. But, you know, there are certain karmic streams set into motion that are so serious that even in the Ganges, there's salt, you know. It's a meteor in the Ganges, not a salt crystal. And so, the teaching that the Buddha is sharing about karma is that when a person makes karma or karma, that will later be felt in such and such a way, the result will be experienced by all the dynamics of that creation. The making or creating of karma is the interplay of the action and the actor. And as much as possible, the way to prevent negative karma is to increase the size of your awareness, is to grow in virtue and goodness and, you know, open mind, big mind. Freedom from attachment and seeking truth and wisdom. So there you go. So let's talk about that. Any comments? Well, it's not the same, but that doesn't mean there isn't a balance. Meaning you're using the word balance to mean the same, but in this understanding, not the same is balance or is law. Cosmic. This is cosmic law, you know. This is not the Buddha's law. if it's true, which I think we see it can be. I mean, we think we've seen in our own life maybe that too. This is not the Buddha's law. This is the cosmic law. This is the logoic law, which would be balanced. Whether it's true or not is another matter, and whether we agree is another question. The idea is the nature of the seed, right, that ripens to a fruit, is not simply behavior. It's behavior done by a certain mind. And behavior done by a certain development of mind with a certain set of mind conditions that then is automatically, that basically has to generate a manifestation or materialization, which is the karmic return, within the life stream of that same mind. But the life stream, so it's a life stream of a mind, or a mind stream of a life, which is a being, right? A person, body, mind, spirit complex, is a consciousness life stream, or an energy consciousness life stream. There's no ego. There is no solid separated self. But there is the manifestation of body, mind, spirit complex, energy fields, which are conscious of a certain development that make action. That action is the nature of action is inseparable from the life stream consciousness life stream that does the action. It's, you know, if I say, yes, if I just say yes, my yes is different than your yes, because you're different than me. That's all. Now, at a simple literal level, your yes and my yes are the same. But in a holistic view, your yes and my yes are not the same whatsoever. There is at the literal level, they're the same. At the other levels, they're not the same. Meaning, action is not simply behavior, but it's behavior manifest by a particular condition of a life stream consciousness of a being. A particular condition of energy and consciousness of a particular being is the action. The action is not just action. The action is the movement of a particular energy consciousness stream or body mind spirit complex. And so the trifling evil deed or trifling evil act that the Buddha is talking about here is absolutely not the same. Even if the behavior is the same, the action is the same, the totality of it is not the same. Because it's done in a different way, or it's occurring basically because it's occurring within a unique energy consciousness stream, meaning beingness. Because the being is unique, then the action is unique. And the balance is that a particular action done by a particular being is re-experienced in a particular way, according to the action and the being. And that's balance. In fact, the Buddha would probably say it wouldn't be balanced if every action done by anybody comes exactly back in the exact same way. That the experiencing of karma has to be unique, because the doer is unique. And then too, the doer is changing. Meaning, the condition of that consciousness energy stream, meaning us, is different in the future than it is now, if we think about past, present, and future. Therefore, the ripening of the karma, or the karmic return, occurs within a unique and changed life stream or being. And that's the balance. But it's a very, very subtle balance, and it's certainly not one-to-one that, punch out gets punched back. It's not like that. It's a matter of the totality of the being that's forming the action. The nature of the action itself is not the same, even though we can say it looks the same. Because the mind is different that's doing the action, therefore, in fact, the action is different. And then the mind is changing. And so the ripening occurs in a changed environment of self. Therefore, also, it has to take that into account, or it will be experienced in a different condition of mind consciousness. Or energy mind consciousness. Well, evil is used kind of broadly in Buddha's in the original Pali here. I mean, if I say, I hate you, or that's stupid, that could be called an evil deed, evil act. So, I mean, it's like us, right? We're not perfected, but we still hurt people or make mistakes or say things that we regret or do things we regret. That's all they mean. A person of more development and a person of less development, both on the right circumstances, can get angry. Both can do something they regret later. That's what it means by an evil deed. And that's why it's also trifling. a person of greater development, yeah, wouldn't do a more significant, but it's, anything's possible, you know? I mean, people, you know, in the right circumstance, anything can be happening, right? For many people, if the blockages remain until you're perfectly enlightened, many things can happen in the right circumstance, right? You can't imagine becoming enraged. You can't imagine violently hurting somebody in a sense of defending the helpless or something. Yeah, I think you can imagine any. We can imagine anything. So that really means that you know, the karma of individuals and nations or collectives is not simply a matter of the action, but the consciousness which performed the action, and the consciousness as it develops that later will experience the ripened action or the karmic return. And that's, I think that's very subtle and very heavy. Well, ignorance of the law is no exemption from the law. So it doesn't matter whether you believe you're doing something wrong or not. That's not a major element in the karmic calculation. I mean, it's some, but you know, not knowing the cosmic law doesn't prevent cosmic law. It doesn't alter very much the required return or outplay of karmic law. Of course, the subconscious knows it all. That's right. The person who doesn't know, or us in our not knowing, is in the condition of not knowing. We are in the condition of not knowing, and those who don't know are in the condition of not knowing by the rejection of the seeking of knowing. The rejection of the seeking of knowing is the cause of not knowing. The rejection of the seeking of knowing is action. Conscious action or deliberate action, even if it's unconscious, it's deliberate or intentional. It's an intentional avoidance of the seeking of knowing. That is a seeking to not know, or a rejection of knowing, the rejection of seeking, or the rejection of spiritual seeking or inner seeking, and the choosing of outer seeking or non-questioning or non-seeking spiritually. That itself is a karmic action. That itself has consequences. And that itself is subject to karmic law and doesn't prevent the person from experiencing the lawful return of karmic action, depending again on the action and their consciousness. That's just the way it is. So, yeah. Yes, right. So that kind of avoidance of truth or knowing is a karmic seed that creates, you know, karmic fruit, which would be less opportunity to know and more difficulty in moving out of ignorance. If you reject opportunity, you're also, in the long run, rejecting the manifestation of opportunity. Opportunity comes as a way. If you consistently reject opportunity, you're rejecting the manifestation of a way, meaning of an option for development. If you're rejecting the manifestation of an option of development, you're rejecting development, meaning you're rejecting having a way out. If you don't seek, you will eventually not have the opportunity to seek. And so the people who don't want to see are ultimately blinding themselves, or at least reducing their capacity to see. I mean, why do some people go deaf? They go deaf karmically because they're unwilling to listen. And also as a means of shutting them down from hurting others and hurting themselves more. So karma is a serious, serious matter. Yes, so they can, I mean, you know, the karmic value of deficiency and loss. The karmic value of deficiency and loss is for revaluation and reappreciation and re-recognition of the value or the nature of that which has been lost, of that which is deficient and not present. So the person who's born into a family where everybody's fighting each other and they're strangers is a person who is chosen the catalyst of deficiency of love and intimacy and family care, so as to better appreciate that and to better appreciate and value or to revalue. I mean, if you want to go in the negative path, go right ahead. And in fact, higher self is not saying one should be positive, but then you see, people may already be tending on the positive path but performing negative action. So that person who didn't appreciate family or didn't appreciate love or didn't appreciate close, true relationship is born and chooses to be born into a situation of deficient love, deficient bonding and intimacy and closeness in the family. They chose the deficiency to revalue that which is missing. To determine clearly and consciously, do you want it or do you not? If you want it, you better change. If you don't want it, fine. You also won't have it. Fine. Just know what you want. Know your values. And so the value of not having a soulmate is to value having a soulmate. The value of having no community is to revalue having community and develop the strength and virtues of standing alone. It's the correct or balanced response to the difficult catalyst that is the purpose for the choosing of the difficult catalyst. The purpose for choosing harsh hardship catalyst, aside from the case of required karmic return, okay, that's part of it, and that's another little bit different, but it's all karmic return anyway. But from the view of higher self and polarization, right, there's karmic law is the means by which, is one of the means by which souls progress or polarize. And some part of it is mechanical, which means something that comes out has to come back according to all the different parameters or variables. But from the view of higher self, there's also, this is programmed catalyst. You know, see, the Buddha talks about karma as lawful. It's the higher self that follows the law. The law is le roi et moi, meaning the higher self is the law. The higher self follows the law. The higher self follows the seventh density being and the lords of karma out of the octave. They're all together. They're all working together. The higher self gets his, follows the law joyfully. And that law is meant for the development of souls through the octave, into out of the octave. So the higher self programs catalyst for the for rebalancing or revaluation and continued polarization, and that is karmic return. Programmed catalyst is karmic return. It's lawful, and higher self accords with it. And it's subtle and determined by not only action but the doer, and it's for the purpose of developing. It's for the purpose of right response. The nature of the right or balanced response to karmic challenge is the purpose of the karma coming in. Is the purpose of the program catalyst or that karma coming back. It's not simply, plant an orange seed and get an orange flower. It's also the higher self, in accord with karmic law, programming that which is karmically required or karmically congruent, so as to move through blockages and to continue polarizing. And then, of course, we have to deal with the hardship. But it's all chosen, and the purpose of not having is to revalue that which we don't have, and to appreciate that which we neglected, and to develop the inner qualities necessary to meet that difficult catalyst in a harmonious, balanced way. And that doesn't mean we have good times. Excuse me. It just means that, you know, this is about work and growth and development. And the more you do good for others, the more good comes back. And the more you open the mind, the more dissolved the karmic returns of negative, the negative karmic return of negative action, evil act, whatever it may be. So it's very serious, you know. And it will also happen that if I say to somebody, I hate you, you're bad. If that person has a lowly developed mind, that hearing those sounds, those words, will lead them to some kind of self-punishment or enragement. If the mind is more developed, hearing the same sounds and the words, the blame, may have no major effect, or they don't create self-punishing or enraged response. If you don't create self-punishment and you don't create enragement or enraged mind, then hearing the same sound has a very different effect. So the catalyst doesn't make the mind. The catalyst influences the mind. And the development of the mind is the key determinant of how the catalyst is received and processed, or how we respond to it. And the more developed the mind is less preoccupied with self-punishment and enragement, being enraged. The self-developed mind doesn't want to torture itself, is finished with torturing self or other. But if it isn't, it will apply that to itself and other in response to certain catalysts. So we can see it just that way, right? You say the same bad word to two people, they respond very differently, depending on their consciousness. And it was the karma of both to receive the same bad word, but the effect or the result of the hearing is very different, not because of the word, but because of the hearer. And that's the key. I mean, I don't think that higher self or the universe is punishing. You know, it's not a vengeful God here. And if we're on the spiritual path or positive path, there's a lot for us to learn. And you know, you can just look at it very straight, very simple. If I don't have something that if I'm feeling sad that I'm missing something, that's because I'm valuing it. There are many, many things we don't have that we don't think about, right? You don't have an elephant flying in the room, right? Of course, there's no elephant flying in the room. But I don't miss it because I'm not thinking of it, because it's not something that I value. But there are other things that I value that are the reason why I feel sad that I don't have those things. When we feel sad that we don't have something, or we feel lonely or missing or deficient, deprived, we see that that's what we value. We see that we value that. The sorrow, sadness, shows us what we value. And the period of deficiency, basically, if we continue to move in love and truth, we realize how important it is, and we are changed thereby. We are changed thereby. We change ourselves thereby, by a balanced response with self-healing to the catalyst of deficiency. Well, thank you for today. It's heavy, heavy stuff. And, you know, living on Earth is a sobering experience at this time. So I'm glad we're together. And thank you for the opportunity to let me speak this way. It's very wonderful for me. And I'm glad if it's beneficial to you. And we can talk more about karma next time. And have a good evening or day. And take good care of yourself. And see you next time. Okay, good night.